Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to AMI Radio. I'm your host, Charles Green. Today we'll be talking with author Tom Walker about his novel, The Man in the Empty Suit. Mr. Walker, do we have you on the line?
Yes, you do.
How are you today?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. How are you?
Doing well. Excited to talk to you about this stupendous book. So I was hoping you could begin by telling our readers a little bit about the book.
Okay. The Man in the Empty Suit is, of course, the name of it, and readers have called it a political novel and a, quote, futuristic dystopian novel. Now, it may be, well be those things, but it's much more. My novel is political and dystopian in that it presents a sick, demoralized America around the year 2032 that never recovered from the Trump years. Call it America in rehab. But that has more to do with setting and time frame than with the center of the story. At its core, this is a novel about addiction. Addiction to politics, addiction to power, addiction to drugs, especially opioids, and alcohol, and sex. Let me talk just a little bit about the plot. Our hero, Horace Fimple, a recovering alcoholic on the wagon, is a psychological counselor working a rehab halfway house. His three young subjects who reside there suffer from sexual addictions that are kinky and dangerous and illegal. Horace himself is suffering from post-traumatic Trump amnesia, and even worse, from the trauma of having mysteriously gotten shot. As he convalesces in the hospital, he struggles to reconstruct his past because he can't recognize the America his country has turned into. I meant for Horace to personify America at this time, to embody the country's feelings of having gotten lost with no way home and longing for what she used to be before Trump came along to make her, quote, great again. As Fimple's damaged memory slowly and painfully heals, he laments the fact that the hospital is owned by his half-uncle, a narcissistic billionaire corporatist who wants to run for president. The uncle's name is David Davenport Tolliver, and behind his back, Fimple calls him DDT and the Cobra because he can't stand him. The Cobra has hired Fimple to counsel and babysit three young people and keep them out of trouble, out of the news. This is necessary because a sex scandal in this far-right, evangelical, post-Trump America of 2032 could wreck the Cobra's run for president. The young people's families are so vital to the Cobra's candidacy that he can't allow those families to be discredited in the media. Any sex scandal involving the three young people, even when just arising from within the family, could kill his candidacy. So Fimple goes to work. But very soon, in counseling and treating the three young sex addicts locked up in the halfway house, he grows to love them. When they beg him to set them free, he is tempted. He feels morally obligated to. But he's in his early 50s now with gaps in his resume and can't afford to lose this high-paying job. There are other risks involved as well because his uncle, DDT, is known to be ruthless and vindictive. So what should Fimple do? He looks good because his rich uncle dresses him. But is he just an empty suit? All the while, he must resist the temptation to end his sobriety and start drinking again. His own addiction is to single malt scotch. But anything with alcohol will do, and it doesn't help when he is shot by one of the three young addicts he is trying to help and has to be rushed to the hospital. When he wakes up there, the real action of the novel begins. The chapters will then alternate between his present in the hospital and his past life. Let me add that his love life is in crisis as well. The only two people in the world Fimple loves and trusts are his hard-hat brother Hank, who also works for their villainous uncle, and his ex-wife Chrissy, with whom Fimple yearns to reconcile. Fimple feels betrayed when he learns that Hank and Chrissy have begun a clandestine affair and are in love. Clearly, Fimple has some major problems, but he remains our book's hero. The question is, what will he do? Next question.
Stupendous. So well put and so intriguing for our readers, which is excellent. And it's, as you put it, it was so interesting, you know, both a timely book, but so much more than that, so much more about, as you said, addiction and the human condition, which is just makes it gorgeous. So why did you write this book, and for whom did you write it?
Well, why would anyone write a novel? It's a monumental chore and a headache. I wrote this one at a dark downtime in my life when I had become physically disabled and grown more depressed by the 2016 presidential election. I suppose writing it was like a howl of pain and rage, but I did not write it as an act of political protest. Donald Trump does not appear in the book, but its villain is a Trump-like character, an egomaniacal, amoral person who professes to hate Trump, but wants to be president as much as Trump did, and, I suspect, for the same reasons. Next question?
I think it's so artful that it's, not that there's anything wrong with direct satire, but there's been so much, you know, just direct satire of Trump, and this is so much more nuanced in looking at the wider ramifications socially, rather than just it, the one man, because obviously the fallout exceeds much more than the actions of this one despicable person. So I'm curious.
Absolutely. When we start the novel, Trump is gone. His regime is over, and there's someone even worse in the White House whom I will not name.
that snowball effect is very real and frightening. So what is your background as an author?
I went to UT Austin. I majored in English. I took a couple of journalism courses there. And then in my 30s, after writing a pair of intensely unpublishable novels, I turned to journalism full-time. There, I was more successful. In the 80s, I sold a feature story to Esquire magazine, and three stories to Texas Monthly. I wrote about 300 features and reviews for newspapers, notably the San Antonio Light, San Antonio Express News, San Antonio Current, and for the city magazines of Austin and San Antonio, and Corpus Christi. I also wrote for airline magazines, mostly Southwest and Continental Airline magazines, both of which, at various times, I was also the editor. So none of my pieces got rejected. In the 90s, I tried to write books again. My first published book was Banking on Tradition, a commission history of Texas's first bank, the Frost National Bank, to commemorate its 130th birthday. In 2012, I published my first book of fiction, a short story collection called Signed Confessions. 4 years later, in 2016, I published my first novel, A Day in the Life. So The Man in the Empty Suit is actually my fourth book and my second novel.
Excellent. Okay. And I know that your work is that while this book is we could call it speculative fiction and dystopian, as you said, it's much more than that. That your other work often as well deals with themes of addiction in various ways, and also sort of the gritty underbelly of American culture, which is just good for our readers to know. And I'm curious, as we lead into our next question about your advice for other authors, who are some authors that have inspired you or that you view as sort of your tribe?
Well, my main influence is sound a little old hat now in 2019. I was very much influenced by J.D. Salinger, Norman Mailer, Philip Roth, John Updike. Of course, all of these men are dead now. I'm also a big fan of Larry McMurtry, who hasn't done much lately, but he has written some really fine books. My favorite book from the 60s was Joseph Heller's Catch-22, which I think is one of the great American novels.
You have no argument for me that I would agree. And what I find so striking and why I ask the question is, as you put it, it might seem, old hat, but sort of your work resurrecting very much the impetus of the great American novel and that grittiness that, especially in, you know, what we like to call the post-truth society, that really taking that long-focused psychological and social look at characters in a very human way is often, in my opinion at least, lacking in a lot of these more postmodern novels. And I think it's just so important, the grounding that your work does in hearkening to these other writers is so fresh and new given the landscape of literature. So I'm not surprised to hear that those are your influences. And so speaking of influence, do you have any advice for other authors, whether new and up and starting or authors who've been writing for a long time and are trying to get their work published?
Actually, I do. I'll try to hold it down to 2 or 3 hours worth. But I would advise young authors as follows. Try to write every day, preferably at the same time and the same place. Establish a routine and write until you get tired and the well has gone dry. Number two, try to be alone and avoid distractions and interruptions from visitors and phone calls and cell phones, because they can wreck your inspiration and break your momentum. If things don't go well, and often they won't, take a break, take a walk, do some calisthenics, have some coffee or a Coke. Briefly read something by a writer you particularly admire, and then get back on it. Once you have written something, put it aside and return to it a few days or a few weeks later with a fresh eye and rewrite it. I think it was Hemingway who said, "There is no such thing as good writing. There's only good rewriting." Don't be discouraged or deflated by rejection slips. Even the best writers get them. As I said, the greatest writer, American novel of the 60s, in my opinion, Joseph Heller's Catch-22, and it was rejected by, I think, 24 publishers before one of them, Simon & Schuster, had the guts to accept it. And finally, I would advise, don't read too much of any one author. You just might start sounding like him or her. You should find your own voice.
That's excellent. Excellent advice and a very nice kind of concise, it was, you used the word routine to follow. That sounds great. And especially, that's fascinating about Heller being rejected. I'm sure gives a lot of confidence to other writers. That's terrific. And so
you have to have
obviously
skin. You're going to be a writer.
Yes. No, I think that's very true. And I think the sensitivity and one's empathetic understanding of the human, but the hardened outer shell in the realities of the publishing world is a good balance. And so you've obviously been writing for a long time in various forms, from journalism to novels and short stories. What are you working on currently?
Right now, I like to start with a notebook full of jotted down ideas and then construct an outline from them. Unlike writers who just kind of let it flow like a faucet, I have to know exactly where I'm going page by page and where I've been. Right now, I'm in the notebook stage of a novella, a short novel about 150 pages long, about a college professor whose task is to pick up a once famous elderly writer at the airport, accompany him to the college where that night he will read from his works, and then entertain him for the rest of the evening with good food, good booze, good conversation, and maybe a high-class escort of the night, a good-looking lady for companionship, if he desires one. The professor could be just about any professor in that situation. The writer, however, is based on the late Norman Mailer, the enfant terrible of American letters, from the late 40s until he died in 2007. There will be lots of surprises in this novella and lots of satire and humor. I was an admirer of Mailer's, though I often disagreed with him on social and philosophical issues. Sadly, however, I got to meet him just once. But I did read all his books.
That's excellent. It's a great premise, and also a great figure to draw on with all of his genius and sordid personal life. So that sounds great, and I love your range. You know, short stories, novels, the novella. That sounds wonderful, and I urge my listeners to keep an eye out for that. When it is completed and put out, and so perhaps diving a little into the personal or perhaps process. So since addiction is really the central theme of The Man in the Empty Suit, why is this subject so important to you?
It's important because just about everybody I know is addicted to something: fast food, illicit sex, alcohol, cigarettes, drug, gambling, porn, political TV, dystopic movies. For whatever reason, we Americans too easily tend to get addicted. And right now, our addiction to opioids in places we would not expect, like rural areas, small towns, where the victims are often quite young. It's alarming, I think. As for sex addiction specifically, well, I think we've been obsessed with sex since the 60s at least, and more every year. Mm-hmm. Just look at ads. Too often, those ads sell sex instead of the products.
Yes.
Could I
yes, that's
something
mm-hmm.
about the person I've or persons, I should say, I wrote this book for. I wrote The Man in the Empty Suit for the person it's dedicated to, who is Laurel Goldman, a close friend for about 50 years now, and a better novelist than I am. Back in the 80s, after working at Bellevue, which is the country's first public mental hospital in New York, Laurel wrote a novel called Sounding the Territory, in which the protagonist periodically checks himself into a psychiatric ward in which he feels at home whenever his daily life overwhelms him. Recently, when I pulled Laurel's wonderful novel off my shelf and reread it, it inspired me to write a novel about a psychological counselor working with the sexually addicted, a counselor who could use some counseling himself. One other book I wrote the book for, or parts of it, was a poet named Beverly Nicklaus, a distant cousin of mine, and a sex addiction therapist in her own right. Her revelations about her line of work provided me with a lot of valuable information, and I'm grateful for the authenticity my book gained from my having consulted with her. And,
that's fantastic.
That's
have access.
Unless
to that.
You have
oh,
any more questions.
I'll be curious some last words, but I just for Elizabeth or writers out there listening to that, it's a great combination of both a holistic social and political view on addiction as something kind of fundamental to the American psyche beyond substance, which is normally what we just categorize as addiction, and also your own investment in particular authors and friends with knowledge there, and that ability, it makes sense, the in-depth and detailed complexity of your writing on the subject, given that you have approached it previous to writing from lots of different angles and different influences. So I think that's probably good for the writers out there to take as a model all of your rigorous work in your writing.
In a way, I worry that The Man in the Empty Suit is being touted as a political novel. I just like novels with political axes to grind. My book isn't a political novel, though Trumpian politics do play a part in the motivation of its characters. As I said, this book is really about addiction, and Donald Trump does not appear as a character, just a memory, a bad memory. Of course, a reader need only the prologue to know that references to Trump's presidency will not be kind or nostalgic. If readers can't handle that, they need not read any further. They should toss my book in the trash or return it to the bookshop where they bought it and get their money back.
This is perhaps not politically correct of me to say, but I have a feeling that someone who would not want to read the book because of that may not be going to a bookstore to pick up a book in the first place, but that's my personal opinion.
I would have to agree with that.
So do you have any last thoughts or anything you'd like to share before we wrap up the interview?
Well, I think this is a wonderful time to be a writer right now, because for all the anxiety and even the pain that we see in our society, there are wonderful battles being fought every day. And with the added stimulus of the 24-hour, 7-day cable news, it never seems to let up. Every day presents something truly alarming or truly absurd that we have never heard of before. At least I hadn't. And I'm pretty well up in age. So if you want to be a writer, I don't think you could find a better time than right now, at least not since the 1960s.
Well, that's very, very inspiring, both for the writers out there and also to know that, there's, as you put it, an axe to grind. There's so much to draw from now. So that's wonderful. It has been wonderful speaking with you.
You don't want to preach, but you do want to get into the material and see what it's made of and how it even came to be created, why we have it now.
I think that's what sets your work apart, and particularly and as you've said, it's not it's, I think you refer to it as a howl, and not a satire, or explicitly political, is looking at those human factors, because I think that it's easy to toss around political buzzwords, but if we're not looking at the actual material and human factors, then we're not going to actually, it makes for poor literature, in my opinion, if we don't have that, and two, I don't think we're going to get anywhere or understand anything without a gritty analysis of that, which you've done through this wonderful and dark, which is my favorite, narrative.
Well, I should add that it's not a totally grim novel. There is some humor and there is some satire. You just kind of have to look for it, and you will find it. But I think we're at a kind of bad time in our American history right now, and people need to read more. We have a president who doesn't read. Maybe that's one of his problems.
I think that's a great point, and not to be too corny, I would say if anyone can go out and read anything, they should be reading The Man in the Empty Suit, by Tom Walker.
Thank you.
But yes, well, Mr. Walker, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and we're looking forward to what those notebooks produce into your novella, which I'm quite excited to get my hands on.
Well, thank you for having me on, and I'll get right back to work right now.
All right, wonderful. Well, I hope to speak with you again.
Right. Goodbye.
Bye. That was author Tom Walker discussing his novel, The Man in the Empty Suit. This has been AMI Radio with your host, Charles Green, and as always, remember to read on.